Welcome to Manager Tools. Creating organizational hiring criteria, part two. This cast answers these questions. How can I shape my organization's hiring strategy? How do I decide what questions to ask of candidates? How do I connect what my organization needs with our hiring process? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
For all of our non-US listeners and clients who have people working abroad outside the US, you may want to consider a virtual training. It's much more economical when you don't have to pay travel expenses for your audience to get the trainer to them. We've created workable client training models with digestible chunks of learning, and we've made them affordable. We can deliver all of our standard client trainings, the effective manager, effective communicator, and effective hiring manager, virtually. To learn more about affordable price points and benefits for your group, contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com or read the details posted on the website, www.manager-tools.com/organizations.
All right, Mark. Last week, we started off our series on creating organizational hiring criteria. And we're talking about our first point, still talking about our first point, how can I shape my organization's hiring strategy? And we ended just prior to getting an answer to the question of, have you seen examples of strategic hiring guidance that really seemed really good to you?
Yeah, lots of them. I will say part of the reason you mentioned there that we're still on point one, this originally was an executive tools cast. And I had gotten so many questions about it, I decided to drag it out of executive tools and put it into manager tools. And I made the point about separating a little bit, a tiny bit here, the difference between the role of an executive in this process versus the role of, say, an individual manager. I got into a discussion the other day with somebody who says, well, no, I'm an executive. And I said, oh, but okay, you're a frontline manager. And he says, yeah, but everybody here is considered an executive. I said, okay, what do you mean by considered? He says, well, it's just the way we refer to ourselves. I said, so how do you measure what your team does externally to the organization? Oh, I don't have any external things. I said, okay. Well, he said, and actually I'm only one level below the top. I said, yeah, but unfortunately, when it comes to being an executive, it's not just how close you are to the top, it's how far you are from the bottom.
Or how far you are from the customer.
I was referring to the hierarchy. Yeah, and that's another one, and it's a malleable concept, but there's nuances here and subtleties, and we could talk for days, and I would never finish. So, look, the best strategic hiring guidance that I've seen, and remember now, this is guidance. It's not a series of principles. It's guidance. The whole point of this is to change how people hire. You can't put together a 50-page white paper if it's not clear what it expects people to do. One of the problems with, I see these from HR departments all the time, recruiting departments, here's what we're going to do. And it's just, they're just filled with buzzwords. And the managers are reading it going, this seems like somebody's running for office. It's all about how it's going to be the brave new world, and this is better, and we're going to be a leading organization for all of these various ideas of our human capital and everything. And the managers are reading it going, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, we're just going to wish it into existence.
I don't know what you want me to do. And look, if you're communicating something, if you're an executive communicating downward in your organization, it seems unpopular to say that, but let's all admit that org charts are done vertically. If you're communicating downward within your organization, you darn sure better tell people, this is what I want you to do. On the other hand, if you send me a 20-page document that's full of fluff and hot air and meringue, and there's nothing in there that tells me what to do, pretty soon I'm going to start tuning you out. So this is not policy, it's guidance. So ask yourself, if I were two levels or three levels down from this guidance, what do you want me to do? I'm really busy. I don't have time to read a 25-page white paper about how externally appealing our new approach to talent acquisition is. So in that sense, I'll give you one example. It happens to be my favorite, but it's not my favorite because it's an acronym. It's my favorite because I was there when they were using it, and it was easy to implement. It was guidance I could implement as a hiring manager, if I had been a hiring manager and not an outside consultant.
Yeah, and the cool thing is they translate directly into the questions you might ask to try to determine that, right?
Yeah. Although, in this particular case, I wouldn't say part of the reason I was there was to help them with their interviewing. And I wouldn't say in the beginning, they had the guidance before they had the questions,
sure.
But it made the questions much easier. So it's more than just a list of skills or backgrounds. And remember what we said before, you know, it's a bad idea to say, we're going to have a meeting and we're going to share ideas and then we're going to work through those ideas together and we're going to come up with the guidance. I found that those things don't work that well. So you're going to get some input from your team. You can be in that meeting and then add your own thoughts and communicate it broadly to everybody with some sort of theme, with some sort of way of having it all hang together. And the example I was mentioning is Hewitt Associates, which is no longer its own organization. But for many, many years, Hewitt Associates was ranked as one of the 100 best companies to work for in America. I think that list is now global, appropriately so. But the only reason Hewitt wasn't on it, somebody complained to me a few years later. They said, I just checked and Hewitt's not on the list. I said, yeah, they're a benefits consulting firm. They compile the list. So they can't
put themselves on the list.
That's great. I didn't know that. Yeah. So they had an acronym. I think I've mentioned it before. If you're really a serious listener and listen to all 1,000 of our podcasts, is SWAN, SWAN. Smart, which, by the way, in their business, actuarial stuff and so on, you got to be pretty smart. You got to understand the math and the people bit. Works hard. That's the W. Works hard. Is ambitious. And by the way, ambition isn't necessarily a bad word. It means somebody who wants to get ahead, wants to move the business forward and so on. And someone who is nice. Now, one of the reasons I loved SWAN for so long is they were absolutely clear that they were not going to hire somebody who wasn't nice. And I will tell you something. That's the one that got it for me, because look at the first three: smart, works hard, and ambitious. If you're only looking for that, you're going to have a nasty workplace culture where people are climbing over each other and probably stabbing each other in the back and so on. What's funny about this is nobody ever says ethical or trustworthy or truth-telling, because that's assumed. We actually said that in one of our first casts years ago. We're going to assume that you're trustworthy because we can't test you on that. But the nice thing was what really made me sit up and appreciate it, because I've been telling people, yeah, I think one of my problems is I tell people, no, you have to be nice to one another. And I would get these looks like, no, we're powerful people. We don't have to be nice. Like, yeah. Okay.
Results good and luck. Retention. I've heard that.
Yeah,
before.
Good luck with your turnover problem. I can't seem to keep people. What's the problem? Nobody likes you. Why does that matter? All that matters is my job. Your job is in an organization. You have to be nice. I mean, heck, in some cases, you have to play nice, even though you don't feel like a nice person. Because part of being in a culture, part of being in a society, is moderating one's behavior to allow the society to continue. And if you don't do that, if you're just a rapacious bastard, then okay, you're going to attract others like you, and you shouldn't expect kindness or mercy or forgiveness or retention for that matter. Now, look, please don't get the impression that we want acronyms. God, the number of things I've seen that just are abominations because they try to shoehorn it into an acronym. We actually did it once with the I can still remember it. It's the only one where we said how to train if you're the coach, or how to coach somebody and be their trainer. I think we had 4 D's in that one. And Mike gave me so much trouble about my idea for ECC, the the oatmeal technique, observe, analyze, and tailor, that we've gotten rid of it. And he was right. So I love SWAN, but it's not because it's an acronym. It's because it elevated something that this firm felt was important, that they were going to have a collegial, respectful, nice culture. And more firms, in my opinion, could learn from that. I would have no problem helping a manager or an executive fire someone who was good at their job and not nice. I would certainly coach them first to try to help them not be nice, but I think if they're 35 or 40, it would be hard, and they'll just go find someplace else where they can make a ton of money and not be nice. And as we like to say about people we don't want, please go to work for our competitor. but the quality of both organizations will improve when you leave us and go to them. So SWAN is a good example of an acronym, but please don't make it about acronyms. If you asked us here at Manager Tools, we might say mission first, people always, and over communicates. MPOC, if you like acronyms. Ugh, that's a horrible one.
Yeah, we're not going there.
Yeah. Joel Spolsky, the founder of Fogbugs, and if I'm not mistaken, Mike, isn't he involved with GitHub? Or what other big...
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Tech entrepreneur who has a great book called Smart and Get Things Done, which is his book about hiring guidance. He summed up his firm's hiring guidance with the title of his book, Smart and Get Things Done. That's what they want. And we do. We recommend that book highly, particularly if you're in the technical field, but it jives with what we say all the time about the rest of hiring, not just the technical part. I will say that he gets away with smart and gets things done and not have any niceness or warmth or stuff in there, because typically in technology firms, those things are less prized. They're less important. I just want to be truthful. I just want to be accurate. I'm not being disrespectful when I tell you that was incorrect. I'm simply describing the algorithm in my head that has analyzed your statement and determined that it's incorrect. And the book is fantastic. I recommend it. Okay, so how do you actually start the process? It's so easy. You listen to this cast. Find out what open requisitions exist in your organization. If you don't know that, if you're new, you're new to the cast, an open requisition is a manager having the ability to fill a position by making an offer, okay? If you're an individual contributor and you're listening and you don't know this, managers can't just hire. You can't just go out and hire. I lost somebody, so I'm going to go hire somebody. Or, hey, I think I need more people. And you don't have that authority. In fact, one of the great things is you start learning about role power. A lot of individual contributors think managers have all this role power. They don't. they really don't. Role power is what, 10%, I think? It's 10% of your total, 85% is relationship, 10% is role, 5% is expertise. And you can't hire somebody without authority. You don't have that authority as a manager. You can't fire somebody. You can't promote somebody. You can't even give somebody a raise without getting approval from somebody else. Suddenly your role power shrinks down to way less than most people, particularly individual contributors, think it is. So an open requisition means somebody is in your organization is out there trying to hire. If you're an executive, go find that out. Typically if you're an executive, you've got somebody in HR, a generalist or somebody who's assigned to your organization. So you just ping them. How many open recs do we have? And by the way, if they can't answer that immediately, the moment it shows up as them having read your text, that's a bad sign. So you're going to find out. And then when you send your first email asking for input on this hiring process, on the hiring criteria, if you will, with the questions we mentioned earlier, let everyone know that you hope they can move pretty quickly on this and you want to deepen your hiring approach and apply it to the existing open requisitions. That will get people's attention. If you tell them, hey, look, I want to add a strategic improvement project on top of everything else we're doing, And so it should take a couple of months. And I want to get everybody together and talk about how we hire and who we hire and how we're going to communicate that to everybody. Everybody's just going to roll their eyes and say, another thing to do. Okay. But if you apply to the open recs and say, I want to change the way we're interviewing on these positions next week or the week after, you can do that. It's not that hard. It's going to take the same amount of time. Actually, it'll take less time if you push to make it happen fast, because you won't spend so much time scheduling and rescheduling meetings and sending notes out to people that didn't attend because they were too busy. So you send out that note and then make sure, here's the key. No new open requisitions will be granted or approved or processed without adhering to this guidance.
That'll get people's attention.
Yeah. And what's interesting is it'll get their attention in that I want to get done with this fast so that if I have an open rec, I don't care. If I have a need, if I think there's a need for an open rec, I don't want to have that delayed. And so I want this done. And I want to find out what my boss expects me to do in this new process or in this upgrade to the existing process as best I possibly can. So suddenly I'm focused and attentive. Now, I've had firms say, corporate-wide hiring freeze until we get this all done. No, I think that's dumb. And it takes months. Actually, usually what's happened is the CEO says, now's a good time because I don't want anybody hiring anybody anytime soon. That's a little bit of sleight of hand I don't appreciate, but regardless, you can get it done pretty darn quickly. You don't need six-hour meetings. You don't need to argue about the definition of a word. This is, you're wasting your time. Now look, if you don't have any standard interviewing process, shame on you, you can either do what we're recommending here first and then implement structured interviews, like what we recommend in the Effective Hiring Manager book and the types of interview questions that come out of our interview creation tool, which is available to licensees. Or you could do both at the same time. Again, I have found that if you're an executive, the way to get something, two things like that done at the same time, say, guys, we're not going to spend more than 3 weeks on this. In 3 weeks, I'm not going to be asking you to do any more of this. We're just going to have a couple of meetings each week. We're going to have them quickly and efficiently, and we're going to get out of here, and I'm going to collate the work and send it back out, and we're going to move forward. And I don't care if we only end up with 80% of a solution. I don't. But I'd rather have 80% of the solution we're implementing than 0% of a fantastic solution 6 months from now, because it's going to take us 8 months to determine this. Okay? And let me be blunt. I know it'll get me in trouble. Don't have HR in the conversation. This guidance is for hiring managers. You can have a separate conversation with your HR generalist, but by all means, don't think that your HR generalist should be running this process, because they'll run it for them. And I don't blame them in that sense, but you're running it for your existing managers so they know how you intend to reshape your organization for the future. So you could do both at the same time, both this process and the creation of structured interviews, or you could, if you wanted to, get structured interviewing in place and then go through this process. Because the structured interview creation could be limited to just your open recs right now, because as those are the only positions you'd need to create structured interviews for, again, you could probably do both at the same time. The only people that will be creating those structured interviews are the hiring managers. You may need to look at them if you're only a director or senior director and you only have one layer of managers or two between you and the frontline workers. Look, if you're an executive and you got three levels of managers underneath you, you and your senior team could work on the strategic and cultural questions and have those individual hiring managers work on their structured interviews. And then they're going to be conducting structured interviews. And then shortly thereafter, or right before they start doing that, everybody says hiring takes so long, you can implement the guidance and say, okay, I want everybody to pencil in two questions, and then we will go in and change these structured interviews to include these in writing. I want to make sure we cover two questions, and I want to give you some guidance about what I want you looking for going forward and why. Now, if you're talking about you're an executive with seven layers underneath you, this is a lot of work for an entire org. I'm generally hesitant to recommend this big a gulp on top of everybody's full schedules. But to be fair, an executive's most important strategic responsibility is the acquisition of the best talent to manage and lead the organization into the future. So it can be done. And I found it great fun to actually have the conversation. And there's always one person in every group who loves mission statement meetings. Oh, yeah, we're going to figure this all out. And they want to understand the difference between the word adduce and deduce. Yeah, no, I know, really. No, sorry. No, you got to cut that person off. You got to say, no, we're not doing that. We're not going to overthink this. We're not going to worry about the exact right word. You can say contribute. I can say collaborate. Somebody else can say communicate. Not the end of the world.
What if you're not that executive with seven layers in the organization? What if you're just an individual manager?
Yeah. So when you say individual manager, you mean individual manager and your frontline individual contributors report to you.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Look, you could send out the email to your team with the questions above and say, hey, look, think about this. And in our next staff meeting, I'm going to take 15 minutes of my time that I normally do briefing on, and I'm going to get your input. Or you could say, respond to me before the staff meeting. I'll collate it all. I'll smush it all around, and I'll share it with you at the staff meeting. Then you or your number two could apply that approach along with whatever guidance you came up with on top of what your team did. Don't expect your team to be as smart as you if they're individual contributors. And by smart, I mean that they know how to do hiring. I mean, why would you assume that they would know the hiring process? They don't even know what an open rec is in many cases. Or they know an open rec means we're hiring, but they don't understand where open requisition comes from, right? It's like a purchase order.
What if they don't have any open recs?
Okay, fine. So look, I have, say, eight people working for me in three different roles. I'm going to ask them to give me some guidance. I'll put it into some, give me some input. I'm going to put it into some guidance. And then I'm going to say, let's do a schedule over the course of the next month. And let's work up some specific questions that we're going to ask that address the three different roles that we have people in. I mean, I assume that's what you're asking.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, okay. So out of this will be hiring guidance that I want to apply to my organization and questions that people in my organization will be asking. I can't control what my boss asks. He's a wild card, and actually it pisses me off, but I'm aware that if something pisses me off and I can't control it, well, I'm getting poked with an umbrella, but I'm getting mad all by myself, and so I'm going to get over that pretty quickly. If I could, I would not have my boss involved, and I might actually slip that, you know, if after the last two sessions of people going up for him to approve a hire.
Before we go on, I got to ask you a question because I suspect this will come up. We talk about DISC all the time, and I often hear people asking questions about, should I include DISC guidance in this approach?
Okay, so let me finish where I was going with that particular thought.
Oh, and then okay, sorry.
I'll get to that. Yeah. So if my boss is hiring, if my boss is interviewing and I get along well with my boss and his guidance is clear and my guidance nestles well within his, and I have no problem. If, however, my boss throws us curveballs and it's not clear and he doesn't give guidance, he just says no or yes or whatever, and it's not actually a good experience for my candidates who my people have said they liked and we put in front of the boss, I might actually try to get one past him and say, hey, look, these are hard to schedule. Do you mind, you know, we've been successful the last two times. Do you mind trusting us? Leave us alone. We'll do it. And I'll bring him to you and say, I made an offer and the guy accepted. And my boss may say, yes, he minds, or no, he doesn't, but I'm not going to not ask because either I trust myself or I don't. Now, if I think I'm going to get in trouble for saying yes to somebody that my boss is then going to not like because my boss is petulant and petty and so on. Okay, fine. I'll make sure the boss says yes in a shortened interview so that I protect my backside. As long as I don't think there's a negative associated with my boss's impression that he leaves on the candidate. And far too many people don't understand that they're talking to an external person, which means customer. That's the way to think of everybody external to your company. customer. You know, Mike's my boss, and I have a direct, Kate, and we're hiring somebody to be a peer of Kate's. I interview, Kate interviews, we like this person, we bring him into Mike, and Mike says no. And the guy comes out of the meeting and with Mike and says, I can see why you guys have hiring problems, right? Not that Mike's that way, but I mean, how is that good? Because, and people think, well, this is a person two levels down. I'm powerful to them. But of course, power corrupts. Okay, you asked about DISC. We don't recommend you include DISC hiring guidance. You don't include DISC guidance in your hiring approach, ever. DISC is not a great recruiting criteria. It's useful to know. There's nothing wrong with having people take tests. More than three or four seems overkill. But I would definitely not use it as a discriminator. I just wouldn't. Because you're hiring that person, but assume you're hiring them for the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years. What are the chances that all of their jobs will only call on the DISC profile that they're in now? I mean, I just simply cannot imagine that, particularly if you want to have a flexible, adaptable organization. I think there are actually books written about that in the last 20 years. So no, I wouldn't. I'd like to know. It'd be cool, but I could just like to know by asking, hey, have you ever taken a DISC test? Oh, you have? Good. What was your DISC score? Oh, yeah, 6722. Okay, good. Thanks. That's helpful. It's good to know. And then I mentioned to everybody, hey, by the way, her DISC score is 6722. But would I make it mandatory that people take it and then we compare it to the list and we make sure? No, I probably wouldn't go that far.
Have you been thinking of the M conference and just wishing you could take part? I mean, there's all this excitement with the monthly speaker session calls and you wish you could join. You're just still not sure you'll be able to join us in March. Well, that's all right. We've got an option for you. If you register now for the video-only version of the M conference, what that means is our recordings of the speaker presentations at the event by video and no travel required, we'll invite you to all remaining, that's five, pre-event calls with our speakers and attendee group. The calls will consist of a brief presentation by one of our speakers, followed by group discussion. And if you find out down the line that you want to convert your video registration to an in-person one instead, we can do that down the line. Check it out at manager-tools.com/training for more information.
Okay, so let's get to our next point. Decide what questions will get answers that expose it.
Yes. So the it in that one is a little bit, that sort of grammatically like leaves you hanging. It says, decide what you're looking for. That's what we started with, right? That leads to the hiring guidance. But now, people do that. People do things like, oh, we're looking for swans or geese or, I don't know, wiener dogs, whatever. or we're looking for spirit animals or something, whatever you're looking for, you got to be clear. But then,
yeah, how do you find that?
It's too often that people, it's like a marketing technique. Hey, if you're a spirit animal, you should come work for us. What the heck does that mean? How do individual contributors, not managers, how do we teach individual contributors to look for those things? So we decide what questions will get answers that expose their spirit animal, or are they a swan, or are they mission first, people always over communicates, an MPOC.
Yeah, this is probably where we'll lose most people. Like, oh my Lord, how do I do that?
What do you mean lose them? I think this is the
in
good
sense
part.
Of, oh, hard. Mean? I think it's a lot of people think that is really, really hard.
No, I don't think so. I just don't think so. I think people are. Yeah, I think I would probably categorize that. I could be wrong. I would probably categorize that as I don't know what management is, and therefore I don't know the right answer. And there is a right answer. And the answer is no, there's not a right answer. We know what's effective. We have enough evidence of what's effective. But there's just not a good vehicle, I hate to say it like this, but other than us, to share with managers what's good. I think the vast majority of managers ought to do what Willow thought about doing, which is trust yourself and pick your own finger rather than guessing at what you think might be right. But yeah, okay, regarding this guidance, it's not enough to agree on hiring principles, what we've already done here, okay? It's no question it's critical, but if you don't have tactics to implement it, it's really just sort of a conceptual framework, which is just, I don't know, maybe in certain offices, in certain places, it's good to have a conceptual framework. But if the framework isn't implemented, if it's just an idea, I think you got to be really careful about spending too much time on it at all. And, you know, somebody, if you have a conceptual framework, some folks will think about it. Maybe some of those will use it, but most managers won't spend enough time with it because they're busy and they won't make it their own. And in which case you've just wasted your time. If folks don't make it their own, your strategies or principles will not change your hiring. If you don't intend to change people's behavior with an initiative, an idea, a program, a project, don't do it. Because the coin of the realm in your organization is behavior. That sounds complex, but it's not. I mean, I think everybody knows that at some level.
It's elegant in its simplicity.
Yeah. And look, if you have the idea, but you don't communicate it, it's not of any value. An idea that isn't communicated is of no value. An idea is worthless unless you work the idea, unless you change behavior with the idea. And right now, what we have is an idea, and you will have wasted some valuable management time. So now we need to create questions that will highlight candidates' abilities or traits or lack thereof to help us make decisions about whether or not they fit within the hiring criteria. Now, look, we found that a hiring manager just knowing of your strategy or principles will tend to revert to what they've always done. To say to them, hey, by the way, here's the kind of things we're looking for, and that's it. You just communicate the idea, the acronym, whatever. It won't matter. It's the exception to have a manager who is just briefed on the strategic hiring criteria to then go about on their own, creating their own questions and evaluate the answers to their questions, which, by the way, most people don't think about. They come up with questions, but they don't think about the evaluation of the answers, which is the whole point of interviewing, by the way. And then when they finish that, present a candidate for hiring with a rationale that includes behaviors from the interviews to support the presentation against the strategic hiring criteria. That would be lovely. I would really like that. But unfortunately, that unicorn died. It just doesn't happen.
That's so sad.
I know, it is. And this process, the process of creating the questions, not the process of creating the idea, that's the heart of the strategic implementation, because the idea is worthless if it's not communicated. And for managers, as busy as they are, you have to communicate the idea and the behaviors that will help them compare the candidate to the ideas. Strategies, if you have a strategy, that's great, but you have to have tactics. In fact, there's a couple of books written, really good books about, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, about a strategy, a military strategy that was known, that was clear, and then tactics that don't support it. Now, you might think, interestingly enough, that, oh gosh, if the tactics don't support the strategies, that would be bad, right? Well, you would think so in theory, but actually, no. If you have the right strategy and the wrong tactics, you'll fail. It's generally, that's what the books show. However, if you have the wrong strategy and your tactics adjust, and that you then can infer a different strategy, had you not known what the first strategy, stated strategy, communicated strategy was, and you can then infer a different strategy, oftentimes that works. But of course, look, I mean, we could talk about that all day long, but the fact is, it's way better when your strategy is clear and your tactics are clear. And you might say, well, how do I know what the best strategy is, right? What's the best strategy? Dude, there's no best strategy for your organization when it comes to hiring criteria. There's yours. That's all. Now, you could argue, well, Mark, what if me and another manager in another organization that are competing with one another, different company, competitor, comes up with a different hiring strategy and does better. I said, well, okay, that would be, if you could figure that out, if you could actually tease that out of all the economic data we get, great, good for you. I don't think that's going to happen. And in fact, part of your process is not that your strategy will play out in the marketplace and make a difference. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't, okay? But you better start learning this now before you get to the level of the top of an organization where your strategy will become the entire organization's strategy. If the first time you ever do this is when you're EVP of a billion-dollar division and you've never gone through this process, you're going to let HR run it for you. And it's not going to turn out well. And it's going to be your fault because nobody suggested you do this when you were a director or a senior director or a junior vice president and so on. Okay. Sorry, Mike.
It's the truth. It's uncomfortable, but that's the way it is.
So the questions, creating the questions is actually the key part of all this. The tactics that undergird your strategy are the questions and the probes and the criteria for considering answers and the evaluation of interview answer soundness. And again, comparing them to the criteria and the principles.
See, you just made it even harder for somebody who's new to this. Not only do you have to come up with the questions, you have probes and criteria for considering those answers.
Dude, and we're not even going to dig into that in a great deal of detail in this cast. I mean, because we're partway through number two and we're on. Yeah, I mean, I think we're going long already. I question whether or not we'll get through part two. And I think we have three parts, do we not?
I think so.
So what you do, you create and you use questions that come out of those principles, but those questions depend on what level of specificity your interviews already are being conducted at. That was a really ugly sentence. Sorry. If you're already using structured interviews, create these new questions that attempt to get at the underlying principles in your strategic guidance. In other words, your effort to create a new future for your organization based on the type of people that you bring into it. Please, hopefully everyone agrees that if you bring in different types of people, your organization will change, right? And you create the questions and then you add them to your existing interviews. Over the years, I've helped a number of companies work on their recruiting processes, and you craft some questions that get asked in the first round of interviews, maybe two or three questions. And then maybe they had seven or eight questions that were the strategic ones. And that'd probably be a lot, to be honest. But if they had seven or eight, all of them got asked during a second round of interviews. Now, I get it, guys. I know many of you are going to say, rolling their eyes, there's Mark again talking about bringing somebody in for a second round of interviews. You know, people won't do that. They want one interview and then they want a decision. Okay, well, then hopefully those aren't your kind of people. But regardless, I know that most companies, based on their behavior, don't value high quality hiring enough anymore to spend that much time on it. I think that's funny. I think it's kind of sad. But again, this isn't fantasy tools. It's manager tools. So we try to give guidance that you can actually implement. And so if you are using right now our interview creation tool to create your structured, standardized interviews, you would add the questions about strategic alignment to the custom questions section. And they would be the last questions in your printed interview that you create with the interview creation tool. You might choose to not staple them in the same order and move some of the strategic questions up earlier, since your custom questions come after the other 10 questions. I would argue that strategic hiring guidance deserves to be earlier in the process, because most managers I know in an hour and a half long interview won't get through 10 behavioral interview questions, to say nothing of tell me about yourself and the 5 minutes of chit-chat that people do beforehand. If you haven't implemented any sort of structured approach, you're further behind, right? But you could make the case, and I've seen it happen, that it actually will feel easier if you're further behind. You can create your strategic questions implement them across your org. And even before you have structured interview questions anywhere else in the process, make that, the strategic questions, mandatory. That will then be the introduction to professionalizing all of the questions that you allow to be asked when interviewing people in the near future.
That sounds really smart.
Yeah, you like that, huh? Coming up with the questions and then saying, hey, look, guys, we're really going to be shifting 20 to 30% left or right here. I want you to understand what the shift is. And I want these questions asked. And if you love somebody, but they stink up the joint with these questions, I'm probably not going to hire them. You know, we're going to raise the bar a little bit, and we're going to ask people to go beyond just they can technically do the job. I want to be thinking about it 5 years into the future, right? And so ask them whatever questions you want. Continue doing what you're doing. But these four questions or these three questions or these eight questions, you got to ask these. And I'll expect answers that include addressing their answers to these questions.
Sure.
That will give some structure to a sloppy, messy bowl of jello that is the unstructured interview. So we're having a little framework in there. And then again, you go back through and use the interview creation tool and you tighten up the rest of the interview. Now look, guys, creating basic behavioral questions. I know some of you are going, wait, I don't know, what's a behavioral interview question? It's so easy. It's trivial. Each question has three parts. The lead-in, which explains why the question has relevance for your organization. An open-ended inquiry, things like tell me about or can you describe for me. And then the specific behavior you want to examine.
Okay, you have to give me an example of that.
Yeah, sure. So suppose one of your strategic needs or principles is someone who over-communicates, a la the Manager Tools way. It might sound like this. Here's the lead-in. As a small firm, almost everyone's work affects everyone else. And so we have to tell each other what we're doing regularly. That's the lead-in. Tell me about a time. That's the question. And then here is the behavior. When a project or effort you were working on required exceptionally high levels of communication and coordination, and how did you go about it? Okay, we also mentioned results. I'll give you another one. So you should be able to figure out the three parts of this one pretty easily after the last one. To achieve results, which are our most important metric here, we have to create metrics to measure and report on work. Tell me about a time where you had to not only accomplish something significant, but also create the measurements and reporting around it.
Nice.
So in addition to creating questions to ferret out your strategic criteria, your imperatives, you can listen for examples of behavior that support your strategic criteria in other answers to other questions. For instance, someone who never mentions how and why and when they communicate over four or five or six behavioral questions might create cause for doubt in your head about how serious a communicator they are. This is a classic mistake. Right? The manager hasn't told everybody, we got to have a good communicator, right? He hasn't been clear. She hasn't been clear. And then they go through the thing. And so then she decides, you know, I just realized I got to have a communicator. So she says, tell me how good a communicator he is. What do you mean? Oh, his answers were good. No, I mean, like, tell me in his answers, did he talk about communication? No. Did he talk about different media? Did he talk about escalation at all? Did he talk about creating relationships? No, and no, and no. Now, that's not good. Now, whose fault is that? That's the manager's fault. Okay? Because the manager should have told people, be looking for communication skills, even if we don't ask for it. And if you're going to describe him or her as being a good communicator, you're going to have to give me behaviors in the interviews. Not just, oh yeah, he's good. Particularly if you're asking a high C if somebody's a good communicator, they wouldn't know a good communicator for him over the head. Not that high D's would either, by the way, but high C's particularly.
So the questions, that's important, right? But I think the next step, and again, I worry that people will think it's really harder than it is, is you're going to have to decide what answers will show evidence of it prior to the whole process, right? Part of the process is determining, here are the questions I'm going to ask, and how am I going to evaluate the answers I get to those questions?
Yep.
And we've been going over 45 minutes now. So let's stop here, and this will be, you're right, this will be a three-parter, and we'll finish this up next week. Thanks, everyone. Have a great one. So long.